It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
So that's what they did for this 3rd Congressional District is, you can see they went all the way over to Richmond and they found as many black folks as they could down there and then into Petersburg and carved them up and all this stuff. And then a little bit of Newport News, Hampton, and Norfolk. And it's really just quite a show how they drew this district. It's a work of art in all the wrong ways.
Brian Cannon from One Virginia 2021 presents an overview on redistricting from the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, the Virginia Coalition for Immigrant Rights, and One Virginia 2021. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's new series of state-specific guides for financial caregivers, including powers of attorney, court-appointed conservators, trustees under a revocable living trust, and government fiduciaries such as Social Security representative payees and Veterans Administration fiduciaries. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 275, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Have you ever been asked to manage money or property for a loved one who was unable to pay bills or make financial decisions? Millions of Americans are facing this responsibility, which can be very overwhelming. But it's also a great opportunity to help someone you care about and protect them from scams and fraud. To help financial caregivers all over the country, in 2013, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, released the Managing Someone Else's Money Guides. Last month, the CFPB provided additional help, state-specific guides and resources for people managing money for older relatives and friends. The CFPB just released a set of several Managing Someone Else's Money Guides specific to the state of Virginia. These state guides will make it easier for caregivers to follow Virginia's unique rules and to find help close to home. The Virginia guides are easy-to-understand booklets for different kinds of caregivers. There are guides for agents under powers of attorney, court-appointed conservators, trustees under a revocable living trust, and government fiduciaries such as Social Security representative payees and Veterans Administration fiduciaries. If you are named to manage money or property for someone else, you are a fiduciary. The law requires you to manage the other person's money and property for the other person's benefit, not yours. It does not matter if you are managing a lot of money or a little. It does not matter if you are a family member or not. The role of a fiduciary carries with it legal responsibilities. When you act as a fiduciary for someone else, you have four basic duties that you must keep in mind. 1. Act only in the best interests of the other person. 2. Manage the other person's money and property carefully. 3. Keep the other person's money and property separate from yours. And 4. Keep good records. As a fiduciary, you must be trustworthy, honest, and act in good faith. If you do not meet these standards, you could be removed as a fiduciary, sued, or have to repay money. It is even possible that the police or sheriff could investigate you and you could go to jail. That's why it's important to remember, It's not your money. To learn more, go to www.consumerfinance.gov/blog/managing-someone-else's-money-Virginia. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Last month, Brian Cannon from One Virginia 2021 presented an overview on redistricting. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here are his remarks.
I'm Brian Cannon. I'm the executive director of One Virginia 2021. We are happy to be heading up the redistricting coalition, but even more happy to have so many other folks be a part of this. That makes a huge difference for us, managing a coalition that kind of operates not only because of us, but with us, and that's crucial. So thanks for being a part of this. We'll start with the premise. If you can see on the screen here, does this really count without redistricting reform? And this is our vote. And I'm going to do an overview, kind of 101, and then we can talk about redistricting. Then we can talk about specifically what happened this Monday, which is kind of a kerfuffle, to use the governor's word. And then we can happy to have some questions, so feel free to interrupt as we go forward on this. So to start with, the premise of why we're even doing this, why we care about redistricting reform, is because our vote counts less without it. That's at least the thesis here. So I'm going to jump right into the problem as we see it here, which is they're carving up our communities. For those of you who can see the screen, there is a picture of a neighborhood with a big red line through it, and that is exactly the problem of this overall, because we are dealing with politicians who carve up our communities to ensure that they get reelected. And so if you're thinking about talking to people of this, it's that they're carving up our neighborhoods and communities. That's the line to use. That's poll tested. That's the best way to present this, rather than just showing them a map. But I'll show you at least one map here. But that's the best way to talk about it, is in this neighborhood kind of way. They're carving up our neighborhoods. PowerPoint slide you should have up now is the 3rd Congressional District. And that is Congressman Scott's district. And this is a kind map of this because it actually still includes the James River. As you know, this is one of the biggest gerrymanders in the country, and that's part of why the court rejected it, the real reason being that it was a racial gerrymander. And to lay the groundwork for that real quick, the General Assembly in 2011 and 12 set the standard at 55% African American or black VAP voting age population for that district, or for all the districts they were going to have majority-minority districts in. And so that's what they did for this 3rd Congressional District. Is you can see they went all the way over to Richmond, and they found as many black folks as they could down there, and then into Petersburg and carved them up and all this stuff, and then a little bit of Newport News, Hampton, and Norfolk. And it's really just quite a show how they drew this district. It's a work of art in all the wrong ways. And so the court struck this down, and they ordered redistricting to happen by September 1st. And the General Assembly was supposed to do that and have the governor sign it. And then, but where we are now is the courts will end up doing it. But this is the 3rd Congressional District, which is one of the worst, and just a good example of how our communities are carved up in ways that make no sense. For example, if you're from Petersburg, like my mother is, you would know that Petersburg, Hopewell, and the Tri-Cities down there would be a good place to include, and yet they've carved that up. And my wife and I live in Richmond, and we're the farthest west in here in the city that's still in Congressman Scott's district, and yet Newport News is carved up in Hampton and Norfolk. If you're keeping track of how this is done in general, about one in every five Virginians is an African American. And so we have 11 congressional representatives, and just to keep score, that would mean one out of 11 is an African-American and one out of five Virginians is an African-American. So there's a bit of a discrepancy here, and a lot of it is to blame on the fact that they've gerrymandered this district so much and overpacked in African-American voters beyond what the Voting Rights Act requires. The next slide here is is my favorite map in all of Virginia. It is the map of the county of Fairfax, and it was done by somebody in the city government there, and it has all their Senate districts. Now, to be bipartisan, this one was done by Democrats, and these are the Senate districts in the area. And my favorite district on here is Dave Marston's 37th district. You can see that the cartographer even thought it was important to have two 37s on the map to show that that's still the same district. And I'll say Senator Marston's a redistricting reform supporter. He voted with us on all of our bills before, but that's a it's a good example of a kind of crazy scenario for redistricting. The 30th district is, has the same two on it, and so does the 34th, because this is just a pretty bad gerrymander. The question you guys should be thinking about is, could we do this better? And I'll tell you, we can't do it worse. But the map on the left here is the current map that we live under in Northern Virginia, and that is the that has the state Senate numbers over there, and you see the 37th, that little snake district and all that. On the map on the right is the non-political map done by students in a competition in 2011. These are undergrads or law students. I can't remember which one did this, but they complied with the Voting Rights Act, they complied with the Virginia Constitution, and they drew just infinitely better maps just by an eyeball test. And that's what happens when you take the political considerations out of this. To be bipartisan, here's the Richmond map. The Richmond map looks like a disaster on the left and looks a lot cleaner on the right. Same scenarios of political versus non-political. The gist also that happens to be extra bipartisan here is what we've been told is that the Republicans in the House drew most of this map and left the inner city of Richmond basically undrawn, and then gave it to the Democrats and said, you guys figure out how you should draw this in exchange for their votes. The map, by the way, did pass the General Assembly House of Delegates with 91 yes votes. So that includes a lot of Democrats voting for this particular gerrymander. And so it's a truly a bipartisan issue here. But if we can go back for a second, the gist I want everyone to have in their brains when they talk about this and hopefully serve as ambassadors in their communities for this is they're carving up our neighborhoods. And that's really what they're doing. And that's what I like to always go back to is this is a neighborhood and a community problem, and they're just really darn good at it. To prove how good at it is, I've got 600 dots on your screen right now. That's one dot for every House of Delegates election we've had over the last six cycles. So that would be, you know, one election or 100 elections a cycle, one dot for every one of those little elections. And these are not primaries. These are not special elections. So there's a good old, should be a Republican and a Democrat, maybe an independent or a third party running in the November general election. Here's how many times an incumbent has lost. That's 19 times, 19 out of 600, which is quite a stunning number to prove how good they are at doing this and how assuredly this diminishes the power of our vote. And the end result of all this being that I think it hurts our democracy, the idea that we have House of Delegates members up every 2 years, or every 2 years, congressional representatives up every 2 years, and state senators up every 4 years, and yet they all have about the same reelection rate of, you know, 97, 98, something like that, it's pretty much a shame. Not to say that we need them all booted out, though plenty in our coalition think that, but a little bit of higher turnover would be evidence that our vote actually does matter in some of these. It's also expensive, and taxpayers pay the price. The other thing that helps talk across the aisle on this a lot to folks is a basic understanding of how much this costs us as taxpayers at the state level and the local level. So the first thing to know how expensive this is the litigation. The litigation that's coming about from all this is going to be, at the end of the day, in the millions of dollars. We're looking at probably $2 to $3 million in litigation costs, and that's not over. There's more to come, and as you know, the courts are going to be back doing this redistricting starting September 1. The other thing to think about is splitting, going back to it splits our communities. They split a lot of precincts, and some folks have asked me what a split precinct is, and I'm an election lawyer, so I nerdily know what that means. But a split precinct for normal people who otherwise would have no reason to know what that means was, you know, we all might go to the same local church or whatever to vote, but because we're all in the same neighborhood or within a, you know, 2 mile radius of that church, and we all go there to vote on election day. But I might be walking in voting for one candidate in the 98th House of Delegates district, and you might be walking in voting for another candidate in the 97th House of Delegates district, which adds to a lot of voter confusion, makes it a real bear to administer the election. If you're one of the poor poll workers who are there serving our community there to help people out, it adds a lot of confusion in that. And that also requires them to buy extra voting machines to keep the thing separate. So it's a real nightmare. That costs about $10 million the amount of split precincts we have costs about $10 million over the course of a decade. And most of that is buying new equipment. And just to give you one other number on split precincts, in 2001, after the gerrymander of 2001, Virginia had 75 split precincts across the Commonwealth, which is a lot. They're expensive. But after 2011, in this kind of hyper-gerrymandered state we're in now, the General Assembly had created 224 split precincts. So that's up threefold, and each precinct is costing between $16,000 and $25,000. And a lot of that is borne by the locality. So it's expensive, and we pay for it.
You've been listening to Brian Cannon from One Virginia 2021, presenting an overview on redistricting from the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, the Virginia Coalition for Immigrant Rights, and One Virginia 2021. We'll be back in a moment. We continue now with the remarks of Brian Cannon from One Virginia 2021 on redistricting, now that the Virginia General Assembly has deadlocked over congressional redistricting.
Now, the who's to blame, I think you probably have gotten the gist that, well, personally, I'm a Democrat. This is a bipartisan issue with a bipartisan solution, by the way. But the who's to blame here can go either way. Everybody has ammo to blame Democrats, and everybody has ammo to blame Republicans. So if you're trying to figure out how to think about this, I would encourage you to think about it in a bipartisan way, but more in a power way. And for those of you who are not joining us on the webcast and can't see the slide, I've got a nice picture of a hobbit here from Lord of the Rings. And he's holding the ring from Lord of the Rings, which is the most all-powerful component in this whole thing. And the idea is we trust these nice hobbits to go to Richmond and carry out our business, and we trust them with this power. But some of them are able to rise above that and not be corrupted by it, but some of them aren't, and they turn to Gollum. That's how I view this. It's just a corrupting power and presence here, and that's, you know, a good part of the situation. So that's how I look at it, as a power thing, not a partisan thing. So here's the solution from the 101 kind of standpoint here. An independent commission with nonpartisan criteria. There are 100 ways to do either of these things, but the gist is that an independent commission would help address the conflict of interest that's inherent when politicians draw the lines. If the fact that George Barker or Chris Jones or whomever draws their own district in a General Assembly session and then runs in that district in the following November is pretty offensive to the idea of democracy and if they're playing. The nonpartisan criteria, you really have no need for political data to be used, but that's the driving force that they do in this. And instead, we could base it on basic understanding of how we would normally divide our communities, which would be city, counties, and towns, keeping together racial, ethnic, and language minorities, empowering their votes by not carving them up and doing what we can to keep them together when possible. You know, obviously, respect for the Voting Rights Act and respect for keeping things compact and contiguous and equal population. So there's a lot better ways to do it than the way we do it currently. Our organization has an all-of-the-above approach. We're a 501c3 and a 501c4, so we're involved in education efforts, outreach efforts to various communities. We're also involved in elections with our 501c4. Tram actually helped lead us in the election in Portsmouth this primary, where we helped oust a long-term 30-year incumbent who was a big fan of gerrymandering, and we helped get him out. He actually sat on the subcommittee in the House that killed our bills, so that was even sweeter for us. We are filing our own lawsuit later this summer, actually probably next week will be filed, based on the fact that districts have to be compact according to the Virginia Constitution, and they are not. And for once, we are avoiding the Voting Rights Act cases. Often those are the ones that are charged and kind of litigated over, such as the third congressional that we've got today. But we're going to be avoiding those and looking at other districts. I've got a couple sample districts on your screen there that look tremendously horrible, not necessarily the ones we're suing over, but that'll be coming down the pike really soon. So it's a little preview of what we're doing. And if you're thinking about if this is a long shot, it totally has been. It is less of a long shot now than it's ever been. The pot is being stirred on this, and we're having to do mid-decade redistricting, which opens a significant window for reform, which is wonderful. So as I think about this, I think about the various voting struggles of the past, the women's suffrage movement, which showed that shame and effective organizing can work, and then the civil rights movement, which showed that plus litigation and such matters. So we're inspired by both of those, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to talk. Tram has been working specifically with communities of color to make sure that, they are representative in this process, because you can imagine what happens when we leave this to politics. Communities of color are easy targets in some ways, so they're oftentimes divided on here, and that's probably the worst scenario we've got. If you can just extrapolate from the African-American community, I sat with Congressman Scott at a dinner not too long ago, and I said, you have 55% black voting age population in your district right now. Obviously, that's too much. The court said so. He said so. I said, well, what's the right number? It was 53% in 2001 from that gerrymander. And he said, he told me that he was first elected to the state Senate with 36% black voting age population. Now, I find that pretty impressive, because that number is awfully low. A lot of times politicians have been afraid to drop the number of a minority population below 50%, thinking that it wouldn't empower them to elect a community of their choice. If you could drop below 50%, that would make a big difference. Right now, the only court order to redistrict is for the congressional district on the third congressional district. September 1st is when the General Assembly loses its authority to do so per se, and it goes over to the courts to do so. There is a House case pending that we should hear about maybe in the next few weeks, maybe in another month, that would likely force a redraw of some House districts based on the same criteria that they unconstitutionally packed African-American voters into them. But we're waiting to hear on that. There's no timeline for a Senate redraw other than 2021, when this happens regularly. The lawsuit that we'll be filing, if we're successful, will necessitate a redraw in the House and the Senate, possibly, because we'll be challenging in both. So all sorts of moving pieces in this. Minority voting rights and voting rights in general are under attack in Virginia in some very subtle and then some unintentional ways, and then some overt ways as well, as you guys could probably see on a number of things involving registering to vote, even, for God's sakes. The heart of all of this is redistricting, because if we can get this right and we can keep communities together and help them be represented, we'll actually be able to have an impact on public policy in a way that we have to really fight hard to do now, as divided as we are, because a lot of times politicians don't have to listen to us. A good example is here in Richmond. Richmond has three state senators, none of whom live in Richmond. Now, some of those state senators are very good, but we have three state, or maybe all of them are very good, if you want to, depends on what issue. But the three state senators we have, Richmond has enough population for one state senator. Richmond has 200,000 voters in it, and that would use draw a circle around it. That's the size you need for a state Senate seat. But instead, Richmond has a senator from Henrico, a senator from Petersburg, and a senator from Powhatan. And so, you know, when you look at that, and those are two Democrats and one Republican, there's a number of ways to look at that. But, you know, the city of Richmond per se itself is not that well represented in that case, in that regard. So that can be, you know, it's kind of interpreted in a bunch of different ways, but that you can extrapolate that to communities around the state. Here's the deal. We need some action on this, and Tram is absolutely right. We've got to, in the short term, there might not be enough time for an independent commission, or maybe that ship has sailed for an advisory part there, that we're working on that. But in the short term, there's no reason why we can't reach out to our General Assembly members today, tomorrow, the next day, and tell them we support this and weigh in on it. We're going to be working on a way to get information into the courts about doing this, to ask them for hearings. We're looking at filing an amicus brief. If other organizations out there would like to join us in kind of an amicus brief or just a letter to the court in general, since it doesn't have to be anything formal, we'd be happy to help you out with that. We've got a number of lawyers on our team here at One Virginia 2021. You can always email us at director@onevirginia2021.org, and we will gladly do that. The other thing, if you want your folks to sign a petition or to reach out to their General Assembly members, there are a number of ways to do that. One of the ways would be on our website. We have a feature where if you sign our petition, it instantly emails your senator and delegate, as well as puts you in our network. So we'd be happy to facilitate that. Or if you have an organization that could use a presentation, maybe a little longer than this or a little more tied in to the locality there, we'd be happy to do that. Between Tram and all the other good folks, myself, that are around the state, we would love to do a part of that. And then it's been successful. And what's the beauty in this, I'll tell you, is that I'm speaking to Tea Party members on the right, speaking to Green Party members on the left, Libertarians, Chambers of Commerce, all of the above to get this. And everyone thinks this is we're in good shape for this. So we're excited about that, and it's making a difference. And I'll tell you that the General Assembly members are experiencing pressure on this issue. First of all, they didn't think anybody cared. They're learning that's not true. And second of all, they thought it was only a liberal or a moderate issue, and they're learning that it's a cross-the-board issue that everybody cares about, and that's a real nice thing to be in that kind of position. So we've even got members of the House of Delegates to change their mind.
You've been listening to Brian Cannon from One Virginia 2021, presenting an overview on redistricting from the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, the Virginia Coalition for Immigrant Rights, and One Virginia 2021. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Sign-up season for health insurance under Obamacare does not start for a couple of months, but people could lose financial aid when they renew for 2016. Join us next week when health care navigators Amelia Goldsmith and Catherine Rollins explain why you must file a tax return on time and correctly to keep your subsidy. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wainwright.